The following Dharma talk was presented at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota, as part of the weekly Dharma series.
So, this morning, for weeks when we were planning this, I was really excited. I was like, okay, we're gonna have this retreat on embodiment. And like, okay, great. And they were like, who's going to give the Dharma talk? And we were all like, not it. And I was like, no, I'll give the Dharma talk. I'm excited. Embodiment, no problem. It's awesome. And then this morning I woke up and my back hurt and my body was tired and I had a slight headache. And I said to myself, like, I was seriously considering calling one of these two and like telling them that I'm wholly unequipped to talk about embodiment. Because right now the last thing I want to do is be in my body. In fact, if anybody has a way for me to get out of my body. So, and that's funny because that's mirrored an experience that I've had several times in my life. And, so I've practiced and studied and taught embodiment for a long time now. I teach yoga and I'm a licensed massage therapist and study the body academically and all these other things. And it's always interesting and humbling to me how when my practice isn't directly seated in the thing that I'm talking about, how uninspired, attached, how far from the thing that I'm talking about is from me and from my mind. Like, I really thought to myself, like, I can't talk about embodiment because, like, I've been detached from the body for some time now. And I was like, well, why? Like, if there's anybody that can talk about embodiment, it's Mr. Embodiment. You should be able to do this. And, I started to trace back, like, where this kind of this desire to not be in my body, as we're talking about the theme of embodiment and embodied dharma. When did I start stepping away from being seated in the middle of this experience of this body? And, this has been a really hard winter for me. A lot has taken place, and I'm sure for many of us there's been challenges that have taken place. And there was that thing called the vortex last week, which I think took my soul. But, in addition to that, there have just been challenges professionally, challenges personally, challenges with my family, challenges financially, And, there was a time earlier on in the winter where, like, my practice was really dead on. It was like I was sitting for long periods every day. I just had a little more time, like, professionally in my schedule to do that. And it was a great grounding for me to have that in my practice. And it helped to make sense of a lot of what was going on. And it also made me very sensitive to what was going on. So in those moments of maybe a little more stability, I was able to handle some of the stuff that was coming up because I was seeing it, I was experiencing it, and I was letting it move through my body and, like, letting go of it as I was processing it. And then I realized at some point that as more and more of the things came, more and more challenges came up, that my bandwidth for handling certain things and the stress was getting maxed out. And it was getting more and more, and my ability to handle it was getting less and less. And then finally, it came to the point where I realized that, I was going back and forth between having these really beautiful moments, days, times of practicing the Dharma and being embodied and processing and letting go. And then on the other hand, of just totally tuning out and not being present with the body and numbing myself because the pain was so great. And then there was some confusion as to, like, what am I doing when? Because interestingly enough, being really numb and detached from the body can often masquerade very similarly to equanimity. Like, no, I'm good. You talking about? Yeah, no, just drama. Nah, just, you know, woo side out. That's good. Really, at the same time, again, sometimes moments, those moments were punctuated with, you know, real clear practice of the salient practice. And other times it was just like, I cannot handle what's going on. Because I can't handle what's going on, I need to hit the eject button. I need to find something to get out of this pain. And, you know, I think about that, and I think about the practice of embodiment. And, you know, on its surface, it sounds great. Who doesn't want to be embodied? It's really cool. It makes for great T-shirts and like slogans, and I am so embodied all over Instagram. It's awesome. But then there's also some very real components of it that aren't as comfortable, because it requires us to come face to face with all of the wonderful, beautiful things, but also the things that challenge and press the heart, things that make life less comfortable, things that make life really difficult at times. And it's also one of the reasons I think that as a society, we, even amongst the different foundations of mindfulness and the different practices that the Buddha taught on how to wake up, I think that we're a very heady society in the West. And there's, on the surface, nothing wrong with that. Our headiness has gotten us a lot, you know? Headiness put men and women on the moon, and like, that's a good thing. And because of that, I think that we can get really invested in one way of practicing the Dharma and one way of moving through life, using the head to, and the using the head and the thinking brain to navigate through all of the challenges that we have. And I realized that that was short-sighted for me to some degree, because while initially thinking through some of my issues and problems, very good and appropriate, it helped me like see things more clearly. Like, oh, you're getting burned because you're dipping your hand in kerosene and lighting a fire. That's cause and effect, right? A plus B. And seeing that through investigation, very good. However, there are times and there are places where just seeing that has not been enough for me. Hello, welcome, come on in. Just seeing that has not been enough for me. Please. So, just being able to analyze what's going on in, without any connection to this lived experience, has not been enough for me to move through and overcome the challenges that I'm facing. Again, sometimes the awareness offers the insight that makes the change, and sometimes like it just doesn't click for me in my body. And the more I practice, the more I realize that between the two, if I had to choose, like the insight intellectually or the insight in the body, I find that for me, the insight in the body is often more longer lasting than someone teaching me a thing, telling me a thing, or me just having an intellectual understanding of it. I can tell you how, like, intellectually, all of the crazy things that I have done in relationships that have continued to resurface themselves because because my body doesn't understand it in that same way. And thinking about that in any of my relationships, my siblings, my lovers, my whoever it may be, like, is it possible for me to get a better understanding, a felt understanding in my body of what this thing is, of what this insight is, and not just an intellectual understanding? So analyzing is good and appropriate sometimes, but I think an embodied realization of whatever it may be, whatever the insight is, often carries us much further. As I say, you know, a grandmotherly wisdom is the wisdom that sometimes lets the child touch the stove. You know, says, you know, I told you 10 times, But if you feel it one time, I don't have to tell you no more times. So, as part of our time today on speaking about embodiment, I want us to have these micro investigations. So, we'll talk some, and we'll sit a little, and we'll talk, and we'll sit, and we'll just investigate what we're talking about as we're going along, because what good is talking about embodiment if we're not embodying embodiment? Yeah. So with that, let's try right, take a deep breath. Exhale, sigh. Good. Now a couple more deep breaths in and out through your nose. Just silent, soft breaths. Experience the body through the breath right now. It's the experience in the head. And what's the experience in the chest, stomach, the legs? Now, from this softer space, allow your awareness to move into any part of the body that has a slight good feeling. It can be a very significant good feeling, it can be warm, tingling, it can be whatever it is, but just allow the awareness to move into a spot in the body that feels good. So, we'll take a few deep breaths into that spot that feels good. As you inhale, inhale into that good feeling place. And as you exhale, let that sensation move through the body. Just inhaling and exhaling ease and lightness. As we move through our time today, this space will be your anchor. So as you hear the words of the talk, as we come out and do some more discussion, all of that, see if it's possible to let the awareness remain in this space, at least to some degree. Sure, listen to the words and engage in the conversation, but let some of the awareness remain in this space here and listen from this space. We'll call you back to this anchor throughout our time, but just play with this experience. Deep breath in through the nose. Exhale, sigh. And with the eyes open. Embodiment. So, 9 years ago, I got blessed to become the daddy of what was scientifically proven to be the single best dog to ever walk the face of the earth. her name was Io. It means joy, and she was a big joy. She was my boxer baby. And it's my sweetheart. And she was like, kind of, I guess, I mean, obviously science didn't prove it, but science suggested it. She was the perfect dog. I mean, like, we would work out together. She would be able to go for, like, miles and miles jogging. We'd cuddle, wrestle. Like, she didn't mind it when, like, I blamed bad smells of not throwing the trash out on her. And like she was great. And when I talk about some of the hard things that happened this winter, one of the hard things was this week that beautiful being transitioned. And it was another moment where I realized, one, my own frailty and humanity, because this being that I love so much is transitioning, is leaving. And I also realized how easy it is to disconnect when things get really hard. Right? So like it was just really hard for me. Like I didn't, and I had been preparing myself for this to happen. She'd been a little sick lately, but still, like it was one of those moments where I stopped feeling what was going on. Like literally, like colors looked duller to me. Like there was a numbness that I experienced with like the world around me. And you know, part of that numbness, I think, so this practice, being mindfully aware of what's going on, who we are and what we're doing, it's awareness practice. It's important. It's good to be aware. But when things get really, really hard, sometimes the numbness takes over. And I know that the heart of the practice is awareness. But I think that that ability at times for the numbness to step away from the super sensitivity of things, while if that's done long term and that's the habit of living, which it often is, it's an unskillful thing. It can create more suffering and cause more pain. In specific moments, I think it's one of the wisest things that the body can do. Like just step away from it all. Because the body has its wisdom. Like if the body's in intense physical pain, it'll pass out. Why? To protect itself from further damage. And similarly, when there's intense emotional pain, there are times and ways where the body says, you know, this is a little more than I can handle. Let's step away from this and not curse nobody out. Now, with that, I want to be clear too in that when we speak about explicitly like mental health issues or dissociative states, that is analogous to what I'm talking about, but not the exact same thing, right? So when we talk about dissociative states, like those are things that it would be wise to engage a mental health professional on and work with someone like that on navigating, because again, long term, that can create a whole lot of chaos in a person's life. But in this acute moment, I needed to not feel the overwhelming pain of losing my best friend when I was in the vet's office. I needed to not be so sensitive to what this moment of the heart felt like, because I knew that if I opened myself up in that moment to that pain, it would have overtaken me. And I wasn't in a place where I could allow that pain to overtake me and process it in a skillful way. If it overtook me in that moment, life would have shut down for me for several days into weeks. And so there is a wisdom in the body doing what it does. Like, overwhelm happens. There's suffering. Right? It's a natural thing that I think can get stigmatized in our Dharma communities or just in general, but overwhelm is natural. Like, it happens. How we handle that overwhelm is the practice. How we handle this amazing, intense, I don't know what to do, that is where we either move towards awakening or towards more suffering. Overwhelm can be natural. How we handle it is essential to the awakening process. So with that experience happening with Io, I realized that I didn't in that moment have the resources to deal with it. And, you know, it's, Gabe mentioned it earlier, sometimes the practice isn't diving headlong into the place that hurts. Sometimes the practice is going to all the other places and finding grounding in those places outside of the pain. And when we find some sort of grounding outside of that, when it, we allow ourselves to, again, maybe not go directly into it, but to take up residence right next to that suffering, then often what we see is that when the body, mind, and heart is ready to, and there's not resistance to experiencing what is, then there will be a natural unfolding of the suffering into that larger space of awareness and kindness. Right? The body will naturally want to open itself up because it feels safer. It recognizes that this is a place where I can unfold. Which is why I cried like a baby on my therapist's couch yesterday. Because it was a time and place where, you know, particularly as a black man walking through this world, you don't just get to break down in the middle of the day, right? Life has to keep on moving. And it's unfortunate, and I think everybody has their own, can speak to their own aspect of society not allowing them the emotional room to really be with their feelings and their emotions. Me in this body, I experience it as, black man, you don't have that right now, so keep it quiet, keep it moving. Which is often why embodiment can be a challenge or a threat, because on the one hand, there's this impetus within me to experience in the process and to let the life that is unfold, like let my process unfold. And there's this external pressures or situations that say you can't unfold, you can't be you. Excuse me, you can't be you. And whether that's societal, whether it's whatever, racial, whatever it is, like, there's a balancing act between the two. And I think there's wisdom in finding places and spaces that allow us the safety and grounding to do this work together and to be show up fully who we are and allow the whole of ourselves to be present. And so one thing that was really important to me the last couple of weeks, but especially this past week, was because my meditation practice was really getting kind of chaotic, and it wasn't safe for me. I've been meditating for many years now. It wasn't wise, and it wasn't the safest thing for me to sit long periods in silence by myself. Some of the meditation teachers might tell you something different, and God bless them for saying that. But like, I knew for me, if I sat down in the chaos and muck of my mind, it just wasn't enough wisdom to like navigate that skillfully. And so I needed to step away from just sitting still in silence. And in those moments, another thing I was becoming aware of is that there was so much confusion in the mind that I couldn't trust what was going on, right? Like there were questions and thoughts and ideas, and I mean, the mind, everyone's mind races. That's what this practice teaches you. Well, you have racing minds. But oftentimes the mind is a space where I'm in, you know, seated meditation practice is a space where I'm able to go and like find solace and stillness and like alleviate the racing of the mind. But you know, for a couple of weeks, that hadn't been the case. For a couple of weeks, just trying to get up in the morning and sit only made it worse. And So because the mind and the body are so intimately connected, in fact, one, you know, one thing that has been really powerful to me is recognizing that, you know, the body influences the mind and the thinking process. The thinking process influences the mind and the felt process. And if one of those is off kilter in some way, I could spend a lot of time and energy trying to bang my head into the wall to make some type of clarity of thought, which just as a literary metaphor, it doesn't even make sense. Like, how can you bang your head to make it? So I could spend time trying to like bang out the practice in my head, or I can enter through a different gateway. I can enter through the gateway of the body. I couldn't find stability and safety and grounding in my mind. So, but what I could do is find stability, safety, and grounding in the body. And so I told myself, like, Femi, oh, the practice right now, like, you can, I'd allow myself to sit 5 minutes, 10 minutes max. But what you really need to do is you need to be taking walks every day. What you really need to do, make sure you're drinking enough water today. Like, I was teetering back and forth on going into a depression and being like, all right, well, I lost my appetite. I was like, yo, I don't want to eat. And I was like, well, you have to eat. Like, you have, I couldn't very well control what was going on up here, but like, I could set up things in my life that made, that regimented to a certain degree what was going on in the body. And that was super key and important to me, because when the mind wasn't working the way I had been accustomed to it working, the body was able to be more reliable to me in this way. And of course, spending time with friends, like just being in the company of other people that could literally, energetically, and metaphorically hold me while I was just, you know, crying snot bubbles, like. I needed that. And so with that process, with letting the body unfold, with being able to and not force the mind into some place that it isn't, what I found is that, like we said before, going into the not-so-painful places created the safety and grounding so that I could get up next to that which was painful. And then that which was painful, because life is going to move. It's going to express itself. The question is, will we be able to be receptive to the expression of it and process and move through it? Or will we dam up that energy and keep ourselves from truly experiencing whatever life has to offer? And if it's pain that we're damming up and not experiencing, that creates suffering long term. And long term suffering, as we know, creates all types of pathology in the mind, and often refers back to the body. One metaphor for this is in the body, like the process of inflammation. When we talk about inflammation, it's like, you know, this is a terrible thing. And prolonged inflammation, like chronic inflammation, generally is not a good thing, causes all types of problems that we hear about. But in an acute moment, initially when things happen, inflammation is the process of, is an integral part of much of the healing process. Like the initial steps of inflammation, of there's an injury or an assault or an infection in the body walls off that part of itself, either through immune cells or through muscles contracting around it. And it does that to keep that part of the body safe. And which is why you hurt your leg and there starts to swell, there's some inflammation. Part of the reason you can't walk is because the body's wisdom says, I don't want you to further injure me by walking on me. So sit down and relax. And through that process, different inflammatory cells go there and start to break down the gunk or the either the infection or the thing that needs to be healed in that moment. Same thing with the heart. Sometimes the heart gets walled off, gets hard, gets contracted. And in some ways, there's wisdom in not experiencing it fully in every single moment. Just like inflammation, it becomes problematic when that process, that acute inflammatory process, isn't allowed to complete itself, isn't allowed to completely deal with what's there, wash it away, and restore healing. But it stays, that inflammation stays present without fully ever being dealt with. And because it's never fully dealt with, that acute, small, immediate inflammation becomes chronic, long-term inflammation, just like pain. Because that pain that's walled off never gets fully dealt with in the moment, that acute or situational, whatever pain gets walled off, and that pain becomes long-term suffering. So one way to think about embodiment, one way to think about allowing the body to move through what it needs to move through for our own healing is through deep acceptance. You know, deep acceptance of ourselves, deep acceptance of our conditioning, deep acceptance of the fact that we are super attached to the things that we're attached to, deep acceptance. And it's hard sometimes to accept. It's hard to meet our conditioning, our bodies, or whatever with friendliness and say, you know, this is, I accept this. This is the way it is. It's very difficult. And so if we're able to accept a thing, great. It's like the teaching of the two arrows, right? Something happens, a bad thing happens, quote, bad thing happens. That is what it is. But we make it worse by throwing another arrow of judgment on top of that thing and just expanding how bad it is. But if we could simply just see the one thing for what it is, the one issue, quote, problem for what it is, and just accept it for what it is, then we don't amplify the problem. So if we're able to accept it, that, yep, this is my conditioning, this is my body, this is whatever it is, then I'm able to move forward. But sometimes that's too hard. Sometimes I can't accept the fact that I have these flat feet and I just wish this was different. Or I can't accept the fact that X, Y, or Z, or that this family member is behaving like this, or I'm not responding with the great wisdom that I want to respond to in some situation. And so then the question then becomes, can I accept the fact that I can't accept? Right? Can I accept the difficulties I have with acceptance? Because by not accepting, we're adding more tension and stress onto the situation. But if we can bring acceptance even to the not acceptance, then in some way we soften even the not acceptance. Don't worry, just think about it later. Robinson made a very, she was like, what? But yeah. We can soften around the not acceptance. And sometimes, because we, quote, know we should accept, when we are telling ourselves to accept and that's not happening, that's creating more stress in the body. I should accept, I should accept. But if we can accept the not acceptance, that creates less stress. But sometimes even that doesn't work. So sometimes you got to go a third step back. And for real, like, you can go back as many steps as you need to until it feels right in your body. And you know what it, you know where you are with the steps, because you just take an issue in your life and be like, oh, you know, I accept this, and see how that feels in your body. And then if that rings true to you in your body, great, keep it moving. If that doesn't ring true to you in your body, then maybe you need to take a step back and see if you can accept it. And then you start from there and see how that rings true in the body. And take as many steps back to be as gentle and as soft and as easy with this body as possible. Because, you know, in an acute moment, a simple moment, pushing through to anything, like pushing through to make your body, your mind do a certain thing, all right, cool, you can do that. Long term, that will create suffering and stress. If that's the way that we're always greeting our bodies, with stress, with you must, you know, subjugating it and beating it down. And so, cultivating a heart and a mind that is much softer towards this experience and much softer towards the body in all its manifestations allows for much longer, much deeper, much more, much softer expressions of how we move through life and what this practice can look like. Pause right there. Allow the eyes to close softly. Go back to that space in the body, our anchor spot. Take a few deep breaths there. And just ask yourself, what's the experience of this body in this moment? What's the experience of this body in this moment? What about this moment? What about this body is easy to accept? What is a little more difficult to accept? Can we feel the movements of the heart in the body? One definition of embodiment that I like is living life as informed through the sense experience of the body. So letting the body in some way be an antenna or navigator, a compass for us to help guide us through this process. The poet Jay-Z says, no compass comes with this life, just eyes. So to work it out, we must look inside. We must look inside. There's no rule book, no manual to this thing. How can we cultivate more wisdom, more understanding, more insight through these perfect enough bodies that we've been blessed with? Is it possible to be any friendlier to these bodies? And deep breath in through the nose. Exhale with a sigh. Good. The eyes open. Just one or two more points I want to make before we move on to our next part of the day is I've been sharing on my experience as of late, and I want to say also there are other experiences and times with the body, with life, with issues where maybe you're not as in this super contract moment. Maybe life is a little more expansive. And God bless you if that's you. We're no longer friends. No. No. When life is more expansive, it's like, there are ebbs and flows of this thing. Those are the moments where it is wise, beneficial, maybe a good time to move into the challenge, to consciously direct the mind into the thing that rubs the wrong way. Those are the times where investigation of the suffering can be more direct, because there's already the stability there. It's, again, the yin and yang, the knowing when to move forward, when to step back. How do you know when you're in either space? Listen to the body. And the body will let you know if it has the stability to move forward on an issue or backwards on an issue. If there's grounding, the prerequisite grounding is in place, then moving forward on that issue is maybe the medicine needed. If it's not in place, then moving forward on the issue may just cause more hurt. So I say that because I know that we're all dealing with different stressors in different ways, and it's just a little proviso that I put on the when I like to speak is like, listen to your body's wisdom and do what is most appropriate for you. Make sure you zig when you're supposed to zig and zag when you're supposed to zag, and your body will tell you how to have that happen. So we're going to pause there. We'll take one more moment to just check back in with our bodies. One more deep breath. Good. Letting all the words go. Good. So, I actually want to have a TV timeout. You can open the eyes again, sorry. A timeout for just a moment. We are going to, in a moment, stand up, take a stretch, a 3-minute bathroom break, grab what you need, and then we'll come back and we'll have time to chop up some of what we discussed about in groups. So thank you all.
This talk, like all programs at Common Ground, is offered freely in the spirit of generosity. To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.